evening, I would like to spend a few short moments with you discussing the relationship of the law and how we relate to the law and the gospel. Now, we just had a good presentation of this, but I would like to come at it from just a slightly different angle, because the health laws are many times looked at as not being very important. It doesn't make much difference what we do in our lives, as long as we keep the Ten Commandments and live a good moral life. But does it really? Can you go and break the laws of health and the laws that govern our being without suffering the consequences? These laws that govern our being are surely set up by God as the Ten Commandments. And I would like to suggest to you this evening that you cannot break these laws of God. You say, well, that's strange. People break God's laws every day. But let's illustrate it by looking at the law of gravity. Now, if you were to go and jump off of a cliff, what would happen? Would one of God's angels step out there and hold you up? Or would you go smashing down onto the rocks below? Most assuredly, you would smash on the rocks below and you might end up with a broken back or a neck. Now, what happened? Did you break the law of God by jumping off of the cliff? No, I don't think you did. I don't think that you can break God's laws. They break you. Whether it's the law of gravity or whether it's the laws of our being. If you smoke for 30 years, you may end up with a lung cancer. If you break the laws of nutrition, you may end up with a heart attack or cancer or various other chronic degenerative diseases. So the laws that God has set up in our being are very, very important, because we do not break them. They break us. Now, these laws of life and laws of health, I have illustrated here in this wheel. And as you notice, the outside rim is trust in divine power. And each and every spoke of that wheel is vitally important in our good health. From the use of water, rest, temperance, exercise, pure air, proper diet, and sunlight. And if we disregard any one of those laws, we're going to suffer the consequences. And to illustrate that, what's missing? Which one of the spokes? Proper diet. And you see, when proper diet, all the rest of them run into trouble too. And you're not going to get very far down the road of life unless you do have a proper diet. Now, I'd like to ask you a question in relation to a Bible text found in 2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter, and reading from the Amplified Bible. But understand this, that in the last days there will set in perilous times of great stress and trouble, hard to deal with and hard to bear. There's going to be some hard times coming, we're told, that are going to be hard to deal with and hard to bear. Now, we're told in medical journals that probably in the next few years, there will come an epidemic of a killer flu that may wipe out millions of people in this world. In fact, you probably remember a year or two ago when they tried to vaccinate everyone in the United States against this swine flu. And they thought this flu was going to come through and kill millions of people. And they were going to get a jump on it. Well, it didn't happen to be the flu that was going to cause an epidemic. But around the turn of the century, there were flus that came through and literally wiped out millions of people on this earth. And it seems like that every year, there's concern and worry about this. Plagues. Influenza. Other types of diseases coming through that could wipe out many people. Well, I would like to suggest to you tonight that disregard of these natural laws that God has given to us is vitally important in protecting us from these pestilences and from these killer flus that are going to be coming through our land. Now, the question I'd like to ask is, could disregard of God's laws actually bring about some of these epidemics? Could poor nutrition, overpopulation, pollution, poor health habits, lack of exercise, disregarding all of the natural laws that are on our wheel, could this bring on a plague? Well, I would like to suggest to you tonight that there are many in this room that wouldn't be here if it were not for antibiotics. Powerful miracle drugs that if you come down with an infection, a strep infection, staph infection, another infection of some kind, there's a powerful miracle drug waiting to help you out. But what if over a period of a few years, bacteria gradually became resistant to every known antibiotic? What would happen? With the very next infection that you got, would you be able to resist it and repel those bacteria? You say, well, technology and science is moving so rapidly that we'll always have an antibiotic to fight off those germs. We don't have to worry about it. Let's go to the authorities and see what they have to say about it. I'd like to read to you from the Medical Clinics of North America, dated September 1978, just last year. All antimicrobial agents so far developed possess the potential to produce adverse reactions in the host. Likewise, the emergence of organisms which are resistant to its antimicrobial effect has plagued every new antibiotic thus far developed, in many instances limiting the utility of the drug. From the Medical World News, dated February 19, 1979, Around the world, drug-resistant organisms are increasing in numbers, stealthily, but steadily. One of the authorities in this field, Dr. Stanley Falkow, professor of microbiology and genetics at the University of Washington School of Medicine, makes some statements. All the presently available data strongly suggest that perhaps as soon as the next decade, we are going to see serious antibiotic resistance among all groups of medically important pathogens. He goes on, it is still too early to say what the final picture will look like. But I, for one, find it very disquieting that the resistance factors have begun penetrating the gram-positives so rapidly. The data seems to leave little doubt that the resistance factor pool is finally starting to become quite extensively disseminated throughout all the medically important organisms. All of the bacteria seem to be gradually developing resistance against all known antibiotics. And not only antibiotics, one by one, but they seem to be developing multiple resistance to various antibiotics in combination. All your powerful antibiotics, they seem to be coming immune to. And here Dr. Falkow says, perhaps in the next decade, we're going to see some real problems. He says, I think physicians should perhaps steel themselves for some of the semi-disastrous consequences that are going to develop. Well, already we can see that this is starting to cause problems. Out of the Western Journal of Medicine, February 1978, Dr. Granoff reports, our results indicate that ampicillin resistance has become a significant problem in the Central Valley of California and probably the entire state. A clipping I clipped out of the Journal of Continuing Education in Family Medicine just this last few months has a headline, Amoebas Kill Swimmers. A usually harmless organism that lives in fresh water produces a strain that attacks and kills swimmers by feasting on their brain cells. Now here's an organism that usually is harmless. And all of a sudden it started attacking swimmers. Parasitologist Dr. George Healy at the Atlanta Center for Disease Control said one puzzling aspect of the amoeba is that some people swim in an area with no harmful effect and others swim later and die. Some people are attacked. And others can swim safely. The erratic occurrences, potency, and resistance to drugs are puzzling aspects of the organism. Symptoms caused are similar to those of flu. Severe headache, nausea, lethargy, followed by coma, and death. Of 123 reports of persons stricken, only 3 persons survived. I think as time goes on, we're going to see more and more reports like this of epidemics, strange epidemics, Legionnaire's disease, and killer flus coming through more and more as we go on towards the end of time. Because I think that people are disregarding the laws of health more and more. I believe that God has a way of protecting His people. From the scripture we know that God has promised to take away all sickness from among us and put none of the diseases upon us that He puts upon the world. Because His people follow His ways and follow the rules and the laws that God has laid down for us. I'd like to spend a few moments this evening digging in to some of the remedies that God has provided for us to protect us from infectious diseases. First of all, let's look at sunlight and see what there is about sunlight that is so exciting, that protects us from infectious diseases. Now, around the turn of the century, a physician discovered that he could get people out in the sun who had tuberculosis, and he could actually cure them from their tuberculosis. In fact, his results were so marvelous and so stunning that they awarded him the Nobel Prize in Medicine, 1903. Dr. Finsen, showing that sunlight could cure tuberculosis. And as the years went by after that, they discovered that sunlight was able to cure strep infections and staphylococcal infections and other kinds of infectious germs. It was just a matter of getting out into the sunlight. And I know what you're thinking. Well, I can't get out in the sun. Why, if I get out in the sun, I would start looking old. And not only that, I would develop skin cancer. That's what all the public health authorities and the dermatologists say. And I will have to agree with them that the sun can cause problems like that. But there's more to it. The sun is very intricately related to our diet. And tomorrow I'm going to spend a considerable amount of time showing you that it is our diet that sets up the condition in our body for the skin cancer and the aging of the skin. And it's only the sunlight that accelerates that condition. The sunlight doesn't cause it. The conditions are caused by our diet. And the sunlight only accelerates the problem. So we'll find out what kind of a diet it is that will protect us from this condition. Because I think as time goes along, we're going to have to become more and more reliant upon these natural remedies like sunlight to protect us from infectious diseases and from a host of other diseases that we're going to learn about this weekend. Now, how does the sun actually work in protecting us from these various infectious diseases? First of all, when the sunlight strikes your skin, it causes your white blood count to increase. It causes a certain type of cell called a lymphocyte to start increasing in the blood. And the lymphocyte is a cell that can actually make immune serum, make gamma globulin. Now, you've probably come in contact with somebody who had hepatitis and had to go in and get a gamma globulin shot. Well, that's that immune serum that they can give you. And those lymphocytes are the ones that produce that. And the sunlight increases the number of lymphocytes. And not only that, but those lymphocytes start turning out gamma globulin. And you can measure the gamma globulin in the blood before you start sunbathing, and then a few weeks later measure it again, and you'll see a dramatic increase in the amount of gamma globulin that's there in your blood, amount of immune serum. Well, now the lymphocytes are not the only white blood cell that the body has. The body has many kinds of white blood cells. Another white blood cell is called a neutrophil. And this neutrophil is a very interesting white blood cell because it acts differently than the gamma globulin does and the lymphocytes. These neutrophils, you'll draw a cell here and they have a funny looking nucleus. Sometimes it's segmented like that. And these neutrophils, when they come in contact with a bacteria, they act very strangely. And this is the way they usually look, but when they come up next to a bacteria, and first of all, the gamma globulin puts a label on these bacteria. Otherwise, they're very hard for these neutrophils to catch. And everything just seems to be working together in harmony because the gamma globulin attaches onto the bacteria and puts a label on it, and that tells this neutrophil to catch it and destroy it. So let's draw a bacteria here. And let's go one step farther and see what happens now. Notice what is happening here. This white blood cell is starting to bend in. Let's look at a different sequence. What's it doing to that bug? Let's take one step farther. It's got that bug in jail, doesn't it? It's actually put it away. Now, there's a little tiny body inside these white blood cells, and they're called lysosomes. And these little bodies are just little tiny circles like this. And we didn't draw them in here in some of these others, but we could. And these little bodies, they move over next to this little prison where this little bug is kept. And these little bodies are filled with poison. Move over right next to it. And they dump their poison right into there. Right into that little jail. And they destroy that bug. How marvelously the human body is really designed and made. It's just amazing when we start to understand what is going on in the human body. And just to give you a little sidelight here, these little lysosomes, they start to manufacture a very potent poison when they need it. And that poison, surprisingly enough, is made out of oxygen. A peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide. And they start to manufacture this. And just about the time they start to manufacture it, that cell needs a tremendous amount of oxygen. It puts on a real desperate need for oxygen then because it needs it to make that poison. Now your hemoglobin, your red blood cells are supposed to carry that oxygen. What would happen if those red blood cells were all plugged up so that you couldn't get the oxygen through? Or let's say that you weren't breathing very deeply. You were kind of slumped over. You were breathing kind of shallow. And your arteries were kind of hardened and all filled up with cholesterol, so you couldn't get that hemoglobin through. Can you start to see some of the reasons for getting lots of good oxygen out there into your tissues? When those cells need oxygen now. And they need an abundance of oxygen. And the scientists call that cell, when it's in desperate need of oxygen, it uses so much they call it a respiratory burst. That just gives you a little bit of background into those neutrophils. Fascinating white blood cell. And do you know the sunlight, when it strikes your skin, not only does it increase the lymphocytes that produce the gamma globulin, but the sunlight actually stimulates these cells here so that they're able to engulf more bacteria. Now, each one of these cells is able to engulf maybe up to 14 bacteria. And it's able to almost double the quantity of bacteria after your body has been exposed to sunlight. Now, what would cause those white blood cells to not be able to engulf bacteria? We're going to come around to that when we get into diet in just a few moments. But first of all, I want to speak with you a little bit more about this oxygen that is so vitally important. Now, there's been some research that has gone on for the last 30 or 40 years showing that there's different kinds of air. There's outdoor air and there's indoor air. And the outdoor air actually has a charge on it. And the indoor air has lost that charge. Well, what difference does it make as long as there's some oxygen in the room? Why do we need to have air that is charged? Scientists have found out why we need that charged air. And the sunlight charges that air out of doors. And there's other things that charge it. The movement of the air. Water moving through the air. And the natural radioactivity in the earth seems to completely keep the air charged all the time. Now this charged air, the scientists have discovered that this charging on the air actually helps that oxygen get down into your tissue. Let me give you just one brief example this evening of why it makes a difference what kind of air you breathe. A number of years ago, about 20 to 30 years, some researchers took a group of experimental animals and they induced cancer in all these animals. And the cancer was a rapidly growing, malignant type of cancer. And then they took these animals and they let one breathe regular indoor air. One group. And the second group, they allowed them to breathe the charged air, the kind you find out of doors, and the kind you could get if you'd get your windows open at night. During the day also. And as the weeks and the months went by, they started following these animals. And the scientists became amazed because the animals that were breathing the indoor air, their cancer was growing and doubling and tripling. But the group that was breathing the charged air, their cancer was hardly growing at all. And even today, in 1979, in the most prestigious cancer journals of this nation, we see those experiments referred to as an uncanny effect of the charged air. And yet they don't understand exactly how that charged air works. But it works. Tomorrow we'll spend more time into the effects of air. But tonight, I would like to just delve into a few problems that we have with infections and not getting enough oxygen into our systems. I have a book in my library called Breathe Deeply and Avoid Cold. And this book is really exciting because here's an ear, nose, and throat doctor, Dr. Josephson, who discovered that if he could get his patients to breathe deeply, that he could actually get them to overcome their colds and their sinus infections by deep breathing. And you can begin to understand how he was able to get some good results by the diagram that we just drew, showing the need of those white blood cells for increased amounts of oxygen. Scientists have discovered that deep bone infections that are resistant to all known antibiotics that patients have had for months and they can't seem to get over them, if they can get more oxygen into those tissues, it seems like a miracle takes place. The infection starts to clear up. Oxygen seems to be the key. And we're going to discover before this weekend is over that not only is it the key for infectious diseases, but we're going to see that it may be the key for cancer and for atherosclerosis and hardening of the arteries, a vitally important element that we need to learn about and learn what kind of air to breathe and learn the proper kind of breathing. Let's get into diet, an area that most of us are fascinated with at least three times a day. What kind of a diet helps us to resist infections? What kind of a diet would keep our white blood cells functioning well? Would keep those neutrophils eating the bacteria and the virus and the other germs at their most efficient rate? Recently has been discovered that sugar would actually decrease the ability of those neutrophils to engulf and eat up the bacteria. A refined substance called sugar could actually do this. And these scientists carefully measured the number of teaspoons of sugar. If the normal white blood cell could engulf, say, 14 bacteria and destroy them, if they gave 1 teaspoon of sugar, that white blood cell was only able to engulf maybe 12. And if they gave 2 teaspoons of sugar, that white blood cell was only able to engulf maybe 10. and right on down to where they would give the amount of sugar that you would get, say in a banana split, or a big piece of apple pie a la mode, or some of the other goodies. And they found out that those white blood cells were actually paralyzed, so that they could hardly move, and the bacteria could merrily swim right around them without danger at all. They could not even engulf one bacteria. Effective diet. Some people have told me that they go out to a social, a lot of people mingling around, and there's plenty of cake, punch, cookies, ice cream, and they eat all this. For some strange reason, in a few days, they come down with a cold. Well, we can certainly see the mechanism that would be happening there. What else? Are there any other refined foods that might cause those white blood cells to not function the way they should? Let's look for a moment at another refined food. Now here we have a whole ear of corn. The corn contains corn oil, carotene, fiber, vitamin E, minerals, starch, and protein. A complete food. Now, what happens when you get corn oil out of this corn? You can see you've removed as waste products over here on the right, vitamins, minerals, starch, protein, carotene. In fact, you remove so much of the vitamins, like vitamin E, out of the corn oil when it's manufactured, that they actually sell the vitamin E in the health food stores as a supplement. And that's where you get natural vitamin E from. It is a byproduct of the oil manufacturing business. Now, the corn oil has a very small amount of vitamin E in it compared to what was there originally. There's no carotene, there's no protein, there's no starch, no minerals, no bulk, and no fiber. It's just a pure refined process that leaves you with nothing but a pure triglyceride, as chemists call it. Have you ever had your triglycerides measured in your blood? Triglycerides are just a fancy name for oil, for the fat that's in your blood. So, this is what happens when we take the oil out of the corn. Now, what happens when we take that polyunsaturated fat, that corn oil, or we could use safflower oil, or any other type of polyunsaturated oil? What happens when we put that in our body and use it in large amounts? Does it have any effect on the immune system, on our white blood cells? Scientists are discovering that it actually does have a dramatic effect. It actually causes the immune system, those white blood cells, to also become paralyzed, to where they cannot function as they normally could. Polyunsaturated fat, we've heard so much good about it. Is there another side to the coin? Another side of the story? Most assuredly there is. It is a refined food like sugar. And there's much that we could speak about it tonight. But briefly, scientists have found that the immune system, your white blood cells, are paralyzed when you ingest these polyunsaturated fats. In fact, a number of medical journals I could quote to you tonight from, like The Lancet, where they report that there's an inhibition of those lymphocytes that we were talking about earlier. They're inhibited by those polyunsaturated fats. And then in a journal called Transplantation, the immune response was inhibited by polyunsaturated fatty acids. Now, why would they publish something like this in a journal called Transplantation? And this is a journal that the surgeons use that are transplanting kidneys and heart. Now, the reason why is because when they transplant an organ, the natural body will reject that organ. And so what do they have to do? They have to suppress the immune system in that body so it won't reject that kidney. And they have found that one of the best ways of suppressing the immune system is by having these people use large amounts of polyunsaturated fat. Use more corn oil margarine, corn oil mayonnaise, safflower oil. Use those things more. And that will help suppress the immune system. And sure enough, they've discovered they can transplant skin from one patient to another, kidneys, and hearts. And they can suppress the immune system. Well, you'd expect, since cancer is involved in the immune system, that if the immune system was really suppressed, that there would be more cancer among people or experimental animals that were using polyunsaturated fat. Interestingly enough, some research showed that as you added the polyunsaturated fats to a culture where these white blood cells were working, that those white blood cells would get to the place where they would not destroy cancer cells anymore. Now, these white blood cells were put in a culture where there were cancer cells. And they seemed to be very effective in destroying those cancer cells. But when they used polyunsaturated fats and put that in the culture medium, it inhibited those cells from destroying the cancer cells. It just paralyzed them. Now, from a number of medical journals, we can read where polyunsaturated fats seem to allow more cancer to form than the other types of fats. As an example, let's read from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition just last year. Malignant tumors of the colon causing death occurred earlier in rats fed corn oil as compared to those fed beef fat. Malignant tumors of the bowel occurred earlier in those fed corn oil versus the beef fat. From the Canadian Medical Association Journal, the results showed that a diet containing 20% corn oil gave a significantly higher tumor yield than diets containing 20% coconut oil. Did you know coconut oil is a saturated fat? From the Australian National University, Dr. Hopkins, writing in a medical journal called Life Sciences, the epidemiological data have implicated dietary fat as an important factor in the etiology of various cancers in humans. Now, I'm not trying to get saturated fat off the hook. It's important in causing cancer also. He goes on, this suggestion is supported by the results of experiments with animals which have shown that increased amounts of dietary fat, in particular polyunsaturated fats, increase the incidence of some spontaneous and induced tumors. Well, we could go on, but it boils down to the fact that the polyunsaturated fats have the ability to slow down the immune system to where it doesn't function like it really should. And I have had a number of patients come to me that have gotten off of their refined oils and fats. And you say, well, what could I substitute for these things? Well, we'll try to get into that, especially tomorrow afternoon when we really talk about diet. But I've had a number of patients who've gotten off of these refined oils and polyunsaturated fats who used to get colds frequently, maybe 4 or 5 times or more a year. And I've seen them and they've come to me and told me that they haven't had a cold in a year or in several years now. They seem to have developed a resistance to various infectious agents. Fat, not only, especially polyunsaturated fat, can decrease the immune system, but it can also cause a problem with clumping of the red blood cells. When you eat a diet that has fat in it, whether it's butter, or whether it's polyunsaturated fat, whether it's margarine or mayonnaise, or whatever it is, that fat can cause your red blood cells to clump together. And what happens when those red blood cells clump together and cannot get through those little capillaries? You see those 3 red blood cells? And red blood cells, surprisingly enough, are actually larger than the little capillaries that they're supposed to go through. And these red blood cells, they have to fold over a little bit to get through those little capillaries. And you can see here, here's a red blood cell, here's a red blood cell, here's a red blood cell, and these are stuck together here. Now normally they would go through this little capillary by folding a little bit. But here we have a situation where this patient has been eating a lot of fat and their red blood cells have stuck together. Now all 3 of those red blood cells just cannot get through that little capillary. And since red blood cells carry the oxygen, what's going to happen to those tissues on down the line over here that need that oxygen to help fight off infectious diseases? Well, you can answer that one. If there's no oxygen out there, if those red blood cells can't get their oxygen out there, those cells aren't going to be able to fight off the infections like they really should. Let's just mention one other natural remedy this evening before we close. And tell you about water. The effect of water. And certainly drinking water, drinking an abundance of water is vitally important because your body needs to clean itself out and it washes itself out with water. But the use of water externally is vitally important. We know of no greater stimulus for opening up the little capillary and little red blood cells can get through better with the application of hot and cool water to the body. It's the greatest stimulus that we know for increasing the circulation and getting those red blood cells out into the tissues. In fact, have you ever had an infection someplace and had a doctor tell you put heat to it? The doctor knows that that heat will cause those little capillaries to dilate up and the red blood cells will be able to get through better and bring their oxygen. And then that oxygen can help fight that infection. And you can see the blood in those tissues there. They turn red when you put heat to them. Well, one story. A number of years ago, there was a lady over in Australia known as Elizabeth Kinney. Most of you probably know her as Sister Kinney, as all nurses are called in the Commonwealth countries. But Sister Kinney developed a method of treatment for infantile paralysis, polio, where she used the external application of water, hot and cold water. She used physical therapy and exercise for these patients, and she started getting some miraculous results in treating infantile paralysis. Well, the doctors in her day, they used drugs, and they used splints and casts, and they used surgery. They were getting some dismal results. But they became unhappy with what was happening over here with Elizabeth Kinney. Patients were starting to flock to her, and yet she didn't have a medical license to practice. And they decided they were going to put her out of business because her methods were unscientific. And the controversy got so strong that it boiled all the way over into England. And a royal commission of physicians met, studied her methods, and soundly condemned them. Well, she kept on in using her treatments. And the word spread and people started coming more and more. And another committee met in England. And they soundly denounced her methods. Finally, the controversy boiled all the way over into the United States, where the University of Minnesota and the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis met, and they had her demonstrate her methods. And they decided they would give them a try. And they tried them. And they started getting some miraculous results. And they set up a number of centers across the country bearing her name, Sister Kinney's Treatment Centers. These natural remedies that seem so simple, the sunlight, the natural fresh air, the simple diet, and the external application of water, they seem too simple to be true. But they're vitally important. They work. And the results are dramatic. This weekend, we're going to delve into these natural remedies and present them to you step by step so that you can understand them, how to use them, how they work. It's been a real privilege to be with you this evening. Thank you very much.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.